episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Molecule. Molecule is reimagining the future of clean air, starting with the air purifier. For 10% off your first air purifier, visit molecule.com. That's M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com and enter the promo code Andrew10 at checkout. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Paul.
All right.
That's the big news today. You know what? I'm gonna indulge today while we're doing this. My wife is making corned beef and cabbage right now as we speak, and I'm having a Guinness. So cheers, nice. Paul. I mean, that's the big story right now, right? It's St. Patrick's Day.
The whole world is out celebrating. All the bars are open. It's great. The rivers are flowing green.
Paul and I did not do a show last week, and I'm going to talk about that. I held on to this for a while as to why we didn't do a show, because I didn't want to cause a mass panic amongst my friends and family. So I was quarantined last week.
What does quarantine mean? You were staying home?
I couldn't go to work, I had to stay home until I got my test results.
I mean, that's my normal existence. What's
that's a normal day for you. For me, it was a big impact because I actually work now, so... I go into Manhattan every day. So what happened was my son was sick. My son tested positive for the flu on Monday. Flu type A, right? Which is avian flu. He was sick. He was getting better. And then on Monday, I went to a place where it's possible that the virus is spread. Okay? I'm not going to say where I went. But I went to a place that there's a lot of concern over. So when I came back on Tuesday, I felt like utter garbage. I mean, totally. I felt very sick. And my biggest concern was not that I have the coronavirus, but that I'm going to get pneumonia again, because I had it three times last year, and I'm having I'm still to this day. It's not the same. Like, my lungs are not the same.
You have kids, dude. You're going to get sick every winter.
All the time.
There's nothing you can do about it.
So whatever, being sick is not a problem. I just didn't want to get pneumonia. So when I went, I'm like, I got the flu. Mm-hmm. I went to the doctor. My fever hit 104 again, which has been every time I'm getting sick. It's sky high. Yeah. So I go to First Med, City Med here in Bayside. And I tell them my symptoms. They gave me the flu test. I tested negative for the flu immediately. And the guy says, hey, any chance were you in contact with anyone that may have this virus or been in contact with somebody? And I said, actually, yes, I did. Last week, a coworker of mine, his friends came back from Italy, and 12 out of the 14 tested positive for it.
Yeah.
And they're in quarantine in Tarzana in California. So as soon as I said that, miraculously, there was a test available.
Really?
They had the test right there. They did the test.
You had one of the 700... was made available in this country.
Well, at the time, because this is last Wednesday, which it wasn't readily available. So I got the test and they said, go home. Don't tell anybody until you get the results. But until then, you are quarantined. Technically, I'm still quarantined until the 26th. I cannot, even though, because it could still be a false positive or a false negative. So they've extended the period of it. So my wife, which is a school teacher, now has to come and take the test. So she gets quarantined also. I just got my test results last night, and I'm clear. I'm fine. I don't have the coronavirus. But, I did all the right things. I didn't go out till I was fine.
You waited because now everything's closed. So even if you wanted to go out.
I can't go out anyway because everything is closed. But I was very sick. I'm still coughing. My biggest concern still is pneumonia. More than anything else, because it for whatever reason, since last year, I can't kick it when I get sick like this. So I was out last week. All last week, I was really sick. Today's actually the first day that I could actually talk like this without losing my breath.
Yeah.
So we're here to do a show. We're not doing it live because I'm having some internet problems here. The world has really changed over the last couple of weeks since we last did a show, right, Paul?
Oh yeah,
we're in a whole different society.
It makes sense. I mean, if you had been paying attention to what's happening out in the world, things change very rapidly in places like Seattle and obviously in China originally, and then in Italy where your friends were or whatever.
Yeah, they were in the Alps. They were in the Italian Alps skiing.
The Italian Alps. That's interesting. I'd say still got it. Well, yeah. My kids went away last week.
Where were they?
Jamaica as part of a church group that was going down to help a really poor deaf school for kids down there. And my son is deaf and he knows sign language. And so he was a great help. My daughter has been spending the past 3-4 months trying to learn sign language so she could communicate better with these kids. But, they were helping, paint the playground and fix computers and, whatever. But of course, the week they're gone, this thing escalates. They're concerned they're not going to be able to come home. They're going to be quarantined when they get home.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And they hear, they saw all the stories about people hoarding toilet paper and blah, blah, blah. And then, they got home, I guess, Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. And what is it, Tuesday? I mean, even since Saturday. Our state has gone on lockdown. They're closing they've closed all the restaurants, the bars, the, non-essential stores, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I mean, that's, the New York Times and probably other places had published some kind of a chart like a week or two ago there where they were saying, the steps that we're finally taking now is what slows that curve. And the curve of people getting it was really high. And if you do this kind of social separation thing, it gets really low. And that's how that and warm weather apparently are how we're going to get past this.
I have my thoughts on this. I'm not a doomsday guy. I don't believe that it's the end of the world.
Andrew, you know what? I don't believe you. I think you are a great lover and believer of conspiracy theories.
I am. I love conspiracy theories.
And I would just tell you that I think this thing is. It's horrible, and it's worse than the normal flu, obviously, from mortality rate, whatever. But it is, barring any, look, we solved it, and here's the cure. I mean, this might be the new normal. I mean, we might have seasonal coronavirus now, like we have seasonal flu. And, for all the bad and awful that comes out of this, I mean, maybe this will trigger some rethinking about the way we do things and collectively as a society or whatever.
Absolutely. I have to, being in New York City, right? One of the filthiest places on the planet.
Yes and no, by the way. I mean, as we've talked in the past, New York City also has one of the best water supplies in the world.
It does.
No, I mean, there's some incredible, I mean, New York is an incredible place in both directions for sure.
You travel in Europe all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You've been in Germany. Have you ever seen a subway system in Europe that is like ours?
No. I did come from Boston. And so Boston's subway system is probably worse, but it's also much smaller. And we have an aging infrastructure problem in this entire country, but it impacts the biggest cities in the East the most because that's where the aging infrastructure is. So no, there. If you go to a place, London maybe. I mean, London might be the one exception to this, but if you go to Berlin or Barcelona or even Paris, which has a very old subway system, I mean, those are wonderful systems.
I think part of the, listen, you can say all the crap you want about the subway system. It's always on time. I'm one of the only few people that doesn't have the issues that everybody
on time
else
today,
does.
Andrew, I can tell you that.
Well, today there's no problems, but it is one of the filthiest systems. So yes. I do think that the municipalities are going to kind of stick with this cleaning protocol. And that's going to be a positive because I take the subway every day, Paul. I joke about, somebody asked me how my day was. I said it was fine until the homeless man vomited blood on my shoes. That's not a joke. That is something that I've witnessed regularly.
So I don't live in Boston anymore, but in the last few years we were there. And then when I visit, one of the things I complain about is the Orange Line in Boston, the cars that they use there were in service in the 1970s when I was a child. And I don't mean that like as some kind of an exaggeration. I mean, literally the exact cars.
Yeah.
And they're rusted out. The corners of them are rusting into holes. They are they're so loud that people who ride on that thing daily experience hearing damage. And, you know, you get on a subway in like Barcelona and it's like this.
Yeah.
The train takes off and it's silent and it's like it's on time to the minute. And then you go to Boston and it's like this cacophony of terribleness. This is something we need to fix. And so hopefully now, confronted by an amazing problem, we'll reset our priorities.
You know? Yeah, I think people are going to change the way that they are. Just etiquette, you know, covering your face. Don't go out when you're sick. Don't sneeze. Don't eat food on the train. And I think
I just wrote a story about the good that in people during crises, you know, but they're also, I also experience great, you know, stupidity out in the world as well. And, you know, until yesterday, because they closed it at midnight, I was going to the gym and there were still people going from machine to machine, not cleaning the machine after they sweated all over it.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, seriously, how out to lunch do you have to be to not understand how important that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. You okay?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just,
what happened?
I have,
it's all right.
Yeah. We have, I live on a circle of hypochondriacs and they are constantly texting and it's just, I see things where my brain just shuts down. I've complained about this so much. You'll appreciate the irony of this sentence coming out of my wife's mouth, because my wife is someone who is not technical, doesn't care about technology and whatever. But she said to me, she says, "You have an Android phone, you can mute it." That's what she said to me. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted.
Yeah. We do have a lot of technology stuff to talk about news wise, but I do want to, this is, you know, with what's happening in the world right now, this is something that Paul and I have always discussed, and it's telecommuting and how, you know, when you really think about your day to day, how essential is it to get in a car and drive to work for most people, right, or get on, you know, take a 45 minute commute, to work. I've been, you know, for me, I look at my own personal habits with how I work and what I do. I've always worked for myself. Paul, same boat as me.
You know what? Actually, Andrew, I'll say this. I mean, you do commute.
Now I do. Now.
Yeah. So you've experienced, I think you might have a better and more recent insight into the troubles that people are going to have along the lines of, you don't understand maybe day to day how important these regular interactions are. So, you know, you complained about the guy vomiting blood, you know, on your shoe, and obviously nobody wants that. But I mean, there's a little bit of social interaction that occurs just in the process of commuting, of going to a place of work and greeting people and, you know, kind of going through your day and doing things in person. You know, yeah. I have been working at home since, I'm going to say 1994-ish. And so I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I was actually kind of a work from home pioneer, not by design, but just kind of worked out that way. But I also do something that's very solitary, meaning that I write, you know, primarily. And for me, the in-person social interactions occur in, like, there are personal things, like I have friends and stuff and we do things. But I mean, as far as like, I don't daily commute. So, you know, we have trade shows I go to and I get to see all the people who do things like I do and on some schedule, and it's kind of neat. And of course, because of this coronavirus, like that's been wiped out. So it's not worse for me, but I mean, I work from home already. And so when I look at the first 6 months of this year, at least, and probably more, every single trip has been wiped off the map, off the calendar. They're all gone. I'm not going to Barcelona, to Las Vegas, to Chicago.
You're not doing your summer trip?
Well, no, we never even booked one. So, okay. I mean, we'll see what happens there. But we're still waiting to find out what happens with my daughter's college. So, and now we're waiting to see what happens with this. So, you know, all this stuff. So through at least the end of June and probably beyond, not going anywhere, basically, right? So you know, that kind of stinks. I mean,
yeah.
But for people who are used to it, used to going in every day, and I'm sure part of it is like, oh, what a relief. This will be so awesome. You know, I guess it depends on what you do for a living, right? Some people can work from home and that will be an adjustment. Some people might not be able to work from home. Some people might still be required to go to a place of work because of the nature of their job. Doctors, obviously, or nurses and healthcare professionals and firemen and policemen, you know, whatever, if food service people, restaurants are closed, but a lot of them have,
takeout
to go or pick up orders they can still do and things like that. And so it's this gigantic adjustment. And then retail, my God, if you're in retail, you're just out. It's not like you go home and you do stuff. You're kind of screwed. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, depending on what you do, this is going to be a very different experience.
Oh, tremendously different experience. I mean, listen, for me, this is my business is always my main job, but yeah. I have kind of fallen into this role of running one of the largest clubs in New York City. Essentially, we have three separate clubs in the city.
Yeah,
and I, due to a bizarre circumstance that I'll one day tell, I've become the VP of the company, and now I'm running the show. Right. But first of all, that whole story is nuts. Paul knows the story of everything, and it's one day it's like a book. I'll have to tell the story one day. But
regardless, I mean, you can't. There's nothing there anymore, right?
Regardless, so today... and we have 1,000 employees that. I have right. to tell them that I'm so sorry. A lot of you will not be getting paid. And and other ones, we're going to have to kind of hunker down and,
pray that this thing ends pretty quickly.
Yeah, because there's no way to sustain paying so many people with no revenue coming in, no income coming in. So it's a really bad position. But I think for a lot of people to kind of go on the other side, you know, I'm always a fan of telecommuting. And working mm-hmm. from home and the ability to have flexibility, not necessarily every day, ability to have flexibility yep. because there are a lot of employers out there.
yeah,
if you can, it's... there's a lot of employers that are against the concept of working yeah. from home.
Well, maybe this will help that too. You know,
I'm going to tell you something. Somebody that I know has a business, right? And mm-hmm. they're in marketing and they believe in having everybody there every single day. From 9 to 5, they followed the traditional hour work schedule. And I was having dinner with him recently, and this guy's a brilliant guy. And I said, here's a question. I go, why does your social media girl have to come in every day 9 to 5?
I know, it's crazy.
Right? And he's like, what do you mean? I go, they're making,
to see her typing at a computer. That's the only way he knows she works.
That is exactly what he said. I only know she's working if she's in front of me. And I said, well, here's the thing. I know because I know this girl. Because now she's doing everything from home, right? Like, because we were talking about telecommuting and everything.
She's working because social media is occurring.
Yeah.
Nobody I work with has to question if I'm working. They can just look at my site.
Did you post anything today? Yes, he did. Okay.
Things occurring, then Paul's working.
Well, he's under the concept of, no, you have to work. In order to get anything done, you need to work 8 hours a day. So he pulls. Yeah, he's the worst person. He's a great guy, but boss.
He's
terrible
an
boss.
Idiot. So yeah, terrible. Let's review some of the recent findings here. So first of all, this 8 hour 5 day a week thing is inefficient, and this is now a fact. Like there is an ideal work week for people and their psychology and their health, where they're most productive and actually get more done. In less time over fewer days, and we will slowly get there. Just like we'll slowly get to the kids who are teenagers shouldn't be getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to classes first thing. They should be getting up at 10 and going to classes at 11 because that's where they're at physiologically, right? I mean, we have to get over these traditions and norms that came out of some circumstance that no longer exists and are actually fairly recent. That we assume are just the way things should go. So that whole 8 hour, 40 hour thing is ridiculous.
It's a old school mentality that somebody came up with. The whole
it's
point
arbitrary.
Of the 8 hour, it is arbitrary, and the whole point that is the concept wasn't that we work 8 hours every day. The concept was that is the maximum output a person can have for productivity.
It's
in their day
of the maximum. It's just that we don't understand that yet. So. you know, here's, look, like I said, I've been working at home since 1994-ish, you know, like I'd have to really think about this to figure out the exact date or whatever, but I've been working at home for a long time. And the one thing I sort of have come to, I came to understand in the first few years was there is some guilt in the beginning. If, for example, I'm home now, like, so I could get up, I'm not going to do it during a podcast, but I could get up, I could grab the laundry basket, carry it downstairs, and I could put the laundry in the machine, and I could do laundry.
Yeah.
And that's not work. Right. And it's like, well, am I wasting my employer's dollars or something here? Am I doing, you know, but honestly, actually, I shouldn't say honestly, because there is an honesty to the work from home thing that is lacking when you go into an office, where if you have to come to terms with it, but it's like, you need those breaks mentally. Yeah. Right. And so it's actually kind of convenient, because I am home, that some of those breaks can include things like I walk down to the street and get the mail, or I, you know, do the laundry, like I said, or I clean out a little portion of the garage, you know, for 15 minutes one day or whatever it is. One of the problems, the way to flip this on its head is to think about the nonsense that people do when they sit in an office for 8 hours a day and pretend to work, because that's what's expected of them, right? Yeah. There is a dishonesty to that. No one is sitting in front of a computer or whatever they're doing at work, working, like literally working on behalf of their employer for 8 hours every single day. No one is doing that.
It's an impossibility.
It's a lie. And you have to kind of get over it. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm a writer, so I don't have a hard job from a physical standpoint, but I mean, I can sit here in front of the computer. I can get lost in what I'm doing. My wife works from home too. So, you know,
by the way, we're talking about office jobs at this moment. I know people are going to be like, well, how about the cops and the firefighter?
No.
We're talking about office.
It is very specifically people can work from home, you know? And even within the confines of those people, my friend, John is an accountant. You know, he can work from home, and he often does. Now he does a lot more. What he does for work is not the same as what I do, but he can still work from home, and it still involves a computer and whatever. But I'm lucky. I mean, I can move around the house if I want. I can work from the other room. I can go up and lay on the bed and work on a laptop. But, you know, I can do these different things. And I think that's the first step, is kind of getting over the guilt of, I'm taking 15 minutes, or I have to go on an errand. I have to go to CVS to pick up a prescription, or I have to go to the, or whatever. I go to the gym, not anymore, but I had been going to the gym, and that takes about an hour every day. With the trial, I spend about 45 minutes actually at the gym, but I mean, it's about an hour really door to door. So that's an hour I'm not working. Do I feel bad about that? No, because for me, and I think for most people, that time off is like how you recharge. You know, it's you need to get your mind off of the thing you're focusing on for work, because sometimes that's when the epiphanies happen. Like, I could be working out at the gym or walking up a hill nearby, whatever it is, and it's like, oh, that's the answer to this thing that's been bugging me that I wasn't able, you know, that if I sat here and stared at the screen all day, I would never have gotten, you know? I think there's a maturity and honesty to working from home. Whereas there is often, not always, but often a dishonesty when you're forced to sit in an office with someone literally hanging over you. What are you doing? What are you working on? What are you doing? You know, and all that nonsense, how you get, you know, interrupted all day long as well, with things that are supposedly crucial to the company. So that's one thing. I think that's one of the hurdles we all have to get over.
It's a giant hurdle that we have to get over. And I think we're kind of getting there with services. I'm curious, do you think there's going to be a shift going forward?
A shift
in the sense that people, from something like this, they're going to realize that we're just, this is how it is. We have to work from home, you know, during high flu season. Maybe it's fine if we only go in 3 days a week into the office and work the rest from home. Right. You know, this whole concept, like in the whole 5 sick days and 5 personal day concept is so bizarre to me that, who decided that we could only get sick 5 times?
This was like a compromise from 0 days off because you were working in a factory and they were trying to bleed you until you died. I mean, like, The system we have now here in the United States, anyway, is so antiquated and pointless. I mean, I will this change it? I hope so, you know, but, you know, we'll see. I look, the old school model, and your that friend you were referring to probably adheres to this, is I have a company, and that company has 500 employees. I need to buy a building that can sit 500 employees, and they all have to have a desk and a computer and a window and, you know, or whatever. And then, you know, this is like the, if you, it's kind of like the conversation you have around cloud computing. You know, back in the day, it was like, well, we have to have all these computers and all these, you know, data center servers and so forth, versus, well, actually, we only need that power at the holidays, maybe, so we could rent it from a cloud computing service. And that's actually, you know, that actually makes more sense. You know, a business with 500 employees today could say, well, we have an office and we have enough room for 30 people. Right. Most of them are working externally somehow, remotely from home, or they travel or whatever they do. But when people want to come in, or sometimes, or if we have meetings with certain groups, we have space for them or whatever. And it's just a different way of doing things. It actually saves the company money, you know, because you're not paying 24/7, 365 for the heat and the air conditioning and the electricity and the rent and the insurance and whatever it is for this infrastructure that you've created, because you grew up in a world where 8 hours and 40 hours was the norm, and that's how you do business. You know, it's a different kind of economy today. And again, I'm not, I feel like we're making lemonade here a little bit, but I mean, maybe this will be one of the impacts. Remember when they canceled like Mobile World Congress, and then they started canceling trade shows. And I had said back at the time of Mobile World Congress, you know, one of the outcomes of this is going to be some of these companies are going to discover they don't need to go to Mobile World
They don't
Congress.
Need to do it. I think it's
this
the same
is like
thing.
A big expense, you know?
Yeah. Tremendous expense.
It doesn't mean it goes away, right? It doesn't have to go away, but it might mean that these things are smaller in the future.
I'm going
to
tell you something. You know why they go? It's a pissing contest. They go because somebody else is going, a competitor is going, and they don't want to be outshined by the competitor. It has nothing to do. It has zero to do with it being a marketing tool for them. These conventions, you go, you meet people, but for the most part, they could do that outside of this.
Yeah. Now, every business is different. Every industry is different, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think about, let's talk about Microsoft. Like Microsoft being the primary company that I cover and have covered over my entire life. I mean, they have gone from different systems with multiple huge trade shows to just a handful of big trade shows. Maybe they're going to go down to one soon, I've heard, is a possibility. But they can do littler local or traveling events, where, you know, they do reviewers workshops for like Surface products, and maybe they go to San Francisco and they go to New York, or maybe they do more virtual events where you have, and actually they're going to do one in less than 2 weeks.
Listen, Apple doesn't participate in any of them, and they're doing pretty good.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to vary by industry. I know people who don't work in the tech industry and have lost out on some major travel like I have, and they're, you know, in lighting industries or in whatever they are, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, things are going to change. And so is it important to fly Paul to Barcelona so he can look at a HoloLens? Probably not. Yeah. You know, probably not.
I mean, that's fun.
And as much as I might like that personally, I mean, you know, maybe these are the types of things we can collectively reevaluate. And I bet some of the decisions we make in the future will be different, even when the coronavirus has ended.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, listen, the whole thing is we just learn from this and then we continue on, and we modify the way we do things. I mean, that's just how it's going to be.
The other thing, by the way, and I don't know how this would impact other people. One thing I've been thinking about is, like I said, all my travel's been canceled for forever. I have no travel canceled. Actually, I have no travel planned, which is, by the way, not a first. But my God, it's a little weird. My wife and I had intended to go to Paris at the end of this month, right? So obviously that trip's over. And, you know, we have time, you know, and we may not be able to go to a restaurant for a while. Like, we don't know how that's going to be, or a bar, you know? And so, like, we're kind of, you know, like everyone else. I mean, I don't mean we're special or different, but I mean, you know, you kind of reevaluate things. And it's like, well, you know, let's make lemonade here. Like, what can we do to make this existence, to make this time kind of mean something, and also not be as monotonous and terrible, right? And again, this is going to vary from person to person or family to family, and depending on what you do for a living and your ability to spend the time doing this. But one thing I plan to do, and I've already started, my office is a mess in front of me. You can't see it, but is going through all the crap I have in the cellar, yeah. which is something I've done, you know, from time to time at other houses, but haven't done yet here. And I'm gonna winnow this stuff out. You know, when my kids went to Jamaica last week, they took they went with the group, so everyone I probably took one or something, but I think they brought 9 or 10 old, really old laptops down and gave them to the kids at the school. Give them to school,
nice,
so they could use them for classes and so forth. And you know, it takes a little time, not a big deal. It's just they were literally just sitting in boxes. I was never going to use them, but it was kind of a nice thing to do. And I talked to the guys who ran the thing, and they were like, "Look, if you ever have any more," and I said, "Oh, I have more.
I have so, so much more.
You have no idea. You're going to be tired of me by the time this is over. But you know, I'm not going to get it all done one whack, right? But but we're looking at months here. Like there is nothing happening with work travel through at least June. No doubt about it, and probably beyond that. Probably not going to be traveling at all during that time frame. If we do, it will be kind of semi-local, you know, whenever things kick on again. I'm going to try to spend some of that time, you know, clearing that stuff out. I have a lot of crap, right?
I actually started doing the same thing with hard drives.
Yeah, I would imagine a lot of people, right, yeah. have something similar they can do to make good use of this time. I even said to my wife, I said, look, you know, is as stupid as this sounds, I mean, this might be an opportunity to save some money because we're not going to be going out and spending it on discretionary baloney like yeah. food and drinks and stuff. And, you know, just have a nice little reset there. You know, it's good for the wallet. It's good for your health. You yeah. know?
Except I've ordered so much stuff on Amazon over the last 2 days. So sure. that's...
Oh, listen, you're talking to someone who stood in line at a liquor store yesterday because they were going to be closing at midnight, you know. So as my wife remarked of that little bit of stupidity, if you were trying to get coronavirus, this is how it happens. It's like yeah. we're in line with like 100 people going out the door. And it's like if they had just left the liquor stores open, there would have been 3 people in that store that day. There would have been no one there. It would have been the safest place on earth. But by announcing that it's going to close, it was suddenly
Wait, your liquor stores are closed?
Liquor stores are closed, yeah. yeah.
You get out of here.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, you got to say, in Pennsylvania, we have state-run liquor stores.
Okay.
So, and it's kind of like, I know New Hampshire has the same kind of system. All the states who care about their people have good systems like this. So, yeah, sure. yeah, it's actually not terrible. But if you go to a supermarket, I think supermarkets sell wine and beer or can. So if you wanted that stuff, it's not like, you know, it's not gone forever. But
you scared me. I was going to mail you wine. I was going to start mailing you stuff.
Andrew, I think you know me well enough to know we're well stocked for the apocalypse in that department.
I got to tell you something. So I'm being messaged right now, and you want to. I live in the most degenerate town. I'm being messaged right now from a bartender friend of mine, and mm-hmm. I'm just going to say. This may be a joke, or this may not be a joke. I'm going to let you decide if this is fact or fiction.
Okay.
You can decide whatever you want. He's messaging. He's like, I just rented a place in one of the next town over that he's making into a speakeasy until the bars could open. And I said,
smart.
How are you going to pull this off? He's like, it's great. Nobody knows we're open. I'm paying people off.
Yeah, but
I'll see you Friday. That's what he just wrote to me.
That's not.
I go, you know, I want to do the social distancing.
The smart thing is not to congregate.
I got enough booze. I could talk to enough people. It's fine. I don't need to go.
Watching a lot of movies, Andrew. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And by the way, have you seen it? I'm sorry. Two things we've talked about that I've sort of wistfully hoped for have occurred.
Okay.
Not one of them because of the coronavirus. The first one is, let me go off on a tangent. I'm sorry. This is, you've heard me complain about the drivers in the state of Pennsylvania, right? I've complained about these people. They're terrible. Let me think about the math on this one. I went 17 or 27. I went 27 years without getting in an accident, and then in the past 6 months, I've been rear-ended in the state twice. Actually,
you're kidding me.
I've been in two accidents, both of them not my fault. Because these drivers are terrible. So this last one, I want you to conceptualize this one in your brain. It's incredible. I'm going on a street and I have to take a left. Well, for you, it's a left over here. I'm turning left, right? You can see the L shape of that. I am across the double yellow line in three quarters of the way through this turn. And someone coming from the direction I was going hits me on the driver's rear side of the car. Oh, think about that. Think about how out of the way you'd have to go to hit me there. Guy was 81 years old. Probably shouldn't be driving. You know, whatever. Anyway, we had to get a rental car. We got a Hyundai. Hyundai doesn't matter. It's a SUV thing, right?
The Hyundai doesn't matter. That's a good one.
Yeah, Hyundai doesn't matter. Who cares? It's a Hyundai. But it has a nice, like a entertainment system thing in it, right, with a screen. And I'm driving around today, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, and it does all these things my car doesn't do with Bluetooth. You can pause and play. It's awesome. And I'm like, I remember I said I Android Auto, whatever, but one thing I would love to have is the ability to project my phone screen to the screen in the car. Okay. This car has that feature. It's called phone projection. Like, it's in the car. So I invented this in my head, and it exists.
Okay, explain that again. You project your screen.
In other words, a lot of car systems will have the ability to have Android Auto or CarPlay.
Yeah, where you plug it in.
If you have those things, there's a map app on there, and you can interact with it that way. And, you know, it interacts with your phone wirelessly, whatever. But what then that's fine. I like that. But what I always wanted to do was basically cast my phone screen to the screen. And then just, because in other words, you sit there with maps on your phone, and then you just go boop, and it comes up on the screen. This car does that in addition to having Android Auto. Like, it actually does that. You can project your phone screen to the screen in the car.
Okay, so it's not a UI. It's not the UI. It's the actual phone screen on the.
Yes. Like, that's...
On both Android and iOS?
Well, I don't know. I only have Android. But I'm just saying it works. Like, what I imagined in my head is in this car. And I was like, that is amazing. The other thing that has happened in the past couple of days that, again, and you and I talked about this one. Actually, we talked about both these things. Was, remember we were talking about how awesome it would be if when a movie came out, we could rent it at home.
Yeah.
$27 or something. Just watch it at home, and it'd be like, it could have a short window, and they could charge enough that it would be worth it. I could invite people over, just watch it on the big screen. Dude, you can do that now.
Yeah, I saw that. Universal's doing it, right?
Yeah, that's awesome, right? And again, like hooray coronavirus. I don't mean it like that, but I mean it's because of the coronavirus and because they don't want people in theaters, you know, in congregating. They've done this thing, which is like I've always thought was kind of a good idea, and who knows. Like, if this goes over well enough...
This could be the norm.
I think so, because... Not because theaters need to go away. Like, people will still go to theaters, and that's fine. But I feel like the revenues for movies will be higher if they do both at the same time.
Well, here's a question, right? Like, I hate movie theaters. It's skivats. Yeah. I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. It's sitting in the dark.
Just real quick. There are adult ways around this. There are theaters that are literally adult only.
I know. And you get food and drinks. You could eat dinner. Now, I get it. I know.
Don't get me wrong. I have been to one movie in the past year. We saw the Star Wars movie, right? So it was a really good experience.
The Mummy was the last movie I went to go see the movie. The original Mummy.
Hobbit? Is that what you said?
The Mummy. The Mummy.
Oh, the Mummy.
The original Mummy.
The original. Jeez. Okay. So it's like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And by the way, you just said the original Mummy and you're young, so you don't know the original Mummy.
I know. That was one way before.
There was one. Yeah. There was a couple probably.
There was a couple Mummy movies.
Anyway, the Brendan Fraser Mummy is the one you
made. Yeah. The worst one ever.
Okay. No, I like that movie. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is we walked out of the theater and we said, oh yeah, we should do this more often. It's actually pretty good. But the truth is I'd rather just watch movies at home. So anyway. Just kind of an interesting aside, like this is happening and I might literally, and it's less money than I envisioned and the window is longer than I envisioned. It's 2 days and this may cause me to spend $20 or something and we'll rent a movie, like a new movie. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Before we continue, we do have an ad today. I do want to talk about our advertiser. I totally forgot to do this because we're having such a great time, but this is a great ad to have today because allergy season is upon us and I'm dying right now. Not only was I sick, which is a whole separate thing. But my eyes right now are, Paul, when I tell you like 1 to 10, it's like an 8.5 and they're burning. Just because it's allergy season's kicking in, and I'm redoing both my bathrooms at the same time, which is never a good idea. So the amount of dust and stuff in the air that's floating around here, sitting on my contact lenses, is absolutely terrible. And Molecule is this amazing company. They've reimagined the future of clean air. And he's a great product. I absolutely love them. They got two different products, which I'm going to talk about, the Molecule and the Air Mini, which is great. But I do want to say you get 10% off your first air purifier when you go to molecule.com and use the offer code Andrew10 at checkout. That's MOLEKULE.com, and use the promo code Andrew10 at checkout. You get 10% off your order. So this is the thing about them. They have created this effective way to clear the air. You know, it's given allergy and asthma sufferers around the country a whole new experience. I'm one of these people, and I've spoken about them for a while and how I'm able to determine how good Molecule is compared to another air purifier. I have, Paul, you actually have it too, and I talk about this all the time. I have the glass thermostat that was made by Johnson Control. This was going to be a big deal a couple of years ago. Not so much now. Nobody's talking about this thing. But a feature of this thermostat is that it's able to calculate the quality of air based on a variety of things. So, you know, volatile allergens in the air. You know, just it has three different types of measurements to tell you how the air quality is. When I don't keep this thing on, I got a 120-year-old house. When I don't keep my air purifier on, right now it's not on. It because I moved it to the basement because I was doing some work down there. It's telling me constantly, open up a window. The air is not good. When I have this thing running, it never tells me that. It tells me my air quality is really good. It doesn't use the HEPA filter. It uses Pico technology that it actually destroys tiny particles in the air that are allergens and even viruses in the air. So, which the HEPA filter, at times, it will not get it. This thing was developed nearly a century ago, and it just can't catch on that level, particles in the air on that level. This thing is great. I know multiple people that have bought this and they love it. Now they have a smaller one. If you have a small office, you could have you could have it in there. Or if you have a larger living room, you could have one in there as well. I highly recommend you check it out. It's molecule.com. That's MOLEKULE.com. And you use the offer code Andrew10 at checkout. You get 10% off your purchase at Molecule. I absolutely love these guys. I have the little ones in my kids' rooms, and I have two big ones now, one in the basement and one in my attic that I got to put back in the living room right now. So it's phenomenal. Also, it's able to do things that the HEPA filter can't. Like it does smaller things like mold, viruses, bacteria, volatile organic chemicals in the air. So it's able to really do a phenomenal job. I absolutely love these guys. Molecule.com, guys. Go check them out. Appropriate time to talk about them, actually. We've kind of touched on this telecommuting, and I thought it was topical to kind of talk about the shift in society more than anything else today, on how we're going to kind of adapt to this new world where I think we're more aware of what's happening. Listen, I'm still telling you guys, the flu and the cold are still a tremendous health risk to many people. You know, and I think people are now more conscious about who they should be around if they're not feeling well, more than anything else. Like Paul, because right. He's old.
When my kids were in Jamaica, they were texting us, regularly, whatever. We were just exchanging whatever. And Mark or Kelly, I can't remember, one of my kids said something like, "I've never been so glad to be young." And then my wife responded with, "Yeah, me too." And I was just like, not exactly, but we're not, I mean, I think the fear here is what, people over 60 or 70 or something. I mean, I think those people are probably the, the most in danger.
So Microsoft is holding an event, a digital event, on March 30th
right along here.
To kind of go right to this. Mm-hmm. What is this event for?
They haven't said, but it's probably for Microsoft 365 for consumers slash what has been rumored to be called Teams for Life, which is basically the consumer version of Microsoft Teams.
Consumer version of Microsoft Teams.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I mean, honestly, with what's going on in the world and with Microsoft, like others, you know, giving away some software for free, including all of the premium features of Teams, I'm kind of surprised they didn't just announce and release this immediately rather than wait another 2 weeks. But, you know, maybe the timing is based on something. I don't know. But, yeah, so we'll see. But that's the current guess.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And I do want to talk about Bill Gates stepping down from the board for Microsoft. This is a big, big step. How do you think this is going to impact Microsoft? I mean, he's been... you know, he's the guy. He started this whole thing, and now him stepping down.
He's been in the process of stepping away from Microsoft for many years, right? And so, you know, I think Microsoft, for continuity purposes, carted out Gates when Nadella became CEO, talks about Gates being a, you know, having the ear of the CEO. He was the chairman of Microsoft until he stepped down. But I think his role in current day Microsoft is minimal. And I think this is more of a formality. The one thing about Gates, and I don't want to harp on this because I kind of harped on about this on First Ring Daily the other day, and I know this will rub some people the wrong way because they don't understand this person as well as they should. But, you know, Bill Gates was a horrible human being and did terrible things in our industry while he was CEO of Microsoft. And he doesn't have a positive legacy beyond the fact that he was one of the pioneers that did bring personal computing to the masses and so forth. But he destroyed so many lives and so many people and so many businesses. It's hard to even calculate the damage that he did and how he held back the industry once Microsoft became dominant by destroying lots of innovative ideas and companies and whatever. So again, I don't want to harp on that, but the one thing I will say about Gates that is kind of incredible and is quite different for him than it is for, say, someone like Steve Jobs or anyone else who was a kind of a technology pioneer is since stepping down from his full-time role at Microsoft, he has dedicated his life to philanthropy and to solving a lot of the world's toughest health problems. And his post-Microsoft career has been incredible. And
a very different legacy. Very different.
Yeah, there's no way to dump on that. So I think the thing that may it's interesting because to me and to I think to anyone listening to this podcast, you hear Bill Gates and you think Microsoft and you think Windows and you think DOS and you think Office and, you know, whatever. But to the broader world and to the context of history, his most enduring legacy, if he's successful, might be this post-Microsoft stuff. And that's nuts. I mean, you know, like Michael Jordan or Larry Bird are not known for what they did after they left the NBA. Yeah. Or, you know, Albert Einstein didn't retire and, you know, go off in some different direction. Whoever you want to name, whatever. So, you know, I don't think there are many or any parallels to what this guy has done after the thing that he was supposed to be most famous for. So it's incredible. And I think, you know, and I'm sure this wasn't because of coronavirus, but maybe, you know, there was some influence like here, like this work I'm doing is very important. The stuff that was happening over at Microsoft is not important. And it isn't. It just isn't important. Yeah. I mean, one of the weirdisms of what's going on today, and I was describing this to my wife, is like, you know, Microsoft will announce Xbox One X specs or Windows 10 milestone or Mixer, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it just all seems so pointless in the face of what's happening in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Apple's going to release like new iPhones this year for some reason. Like, you know, when you think about like shifting priorities, sometimes you need this kind of a slap in the face to understand that this stuff that we're so like hyper focused on in the scope of things is not super important. And, you know, whether it's a pair, I just did a very short write-up about a pair of Samsung earbuds or a phone that is a small improvement over the phone I got last year or a computer that is a tiny improvement over the computer I was using before, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, like at some point, all this stuff just, it just seems to, you know, it's just noise, you know? Not that it isn't, you know, in its own way important, I of course, but yeah, so Gates, he's not exactly Hitler, but I give him credit for, you have to give him credit. I mean, for what he's done since he left Microsoft is incredible.
But it's also, you know, you got to look back to all those executives from that era. You know, many of them were very cutthroat, and the concept of absorbing yeah. and creating wasn't really there as much. You know, right now, when acquisitions are done not to hinder technology, but to better yours. And I think back, you know, you look at the 90s even, you know, total companies were acquired and dumped just to stop innovation.
Please don't put me in the awful position of expanding on what I just said about Bill Gates, because
I kind
of
want to.
The books are out there. You can read it for yourself. I mean, you know, whatever. But
do you think post Gates, right? Mm-hmm. Microsoft post Gates, which went into a very different era, because you had a sales guy running the company. You know, you didn't have a technologist.
Well,
you didn't have a tech guy.
But the one thing I said previous about this and about Gates, about a lot of different people in the tech industry, people who are geniuses are often lacking in other areas. Like if you're really good at something, like Michael Jordan was really good at basketball, was pretty much terrible about everything else in life. You know, like this is the fact. Like it's, you know, sorry if he's your hero, but I mean, like these people are flawed. Because they have to be. Like we're people. Like you can't be that good at something and not leave something else on the table. Gates, and I said this of Steven Sinofsky too, kind of like a military parallel. When you think about Gates was like the right person to see the opportunity and start a company like Microsoft when he did, to get into the right markets and, you know, not to be a dick about it, steal the right ideas and popularize things that might have not taken off as quickly or at all had he not done that. He was the right person to take this tiny company from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and turn it into a global juggernaut that at one time was the biggest tech company in the world, for sure, and one of the biggest companies in the world, and dominated this market in a way that no company ever will dominate again. He was the right guy for that. But at some point, as you become humongous, those things that you used to do, the behavior you used to have as an upstart company, isn't cute anymore. It isn't laudable or respectable, it's illegal, you know, and that's what happens. And that's not unique to Gates. Apple fell into that same trap under Steve Jobs most recently, and that was Tim Cook. Everyone's rooting for the underdog, and everyone seems to forget that company is now the biggest company in the world, and they are a monopolistic, illegal nightmare. Like it's terrible, and that happened.
Listen, Apple just got fined what, $1.2 billion?
Yeah, for like next to nothing. And that's like the tip of the biggest iceberg in the world, but whatever, Apple's a problem for another day. So at some point, it's like the MacArthur thing. Like MacArthur was the right guy until Korea happened and he wanted to invade China.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh crap, this guy's insane. You know, we had to get rid of him. Oh my God. You know, he's like a national hero. It doesn't matter. He's crazy. Like, and Gates hit that point. And so, yeah, when Gates left the CEO role and stepped down for Steve Ballmer, who was his friend, Microsoft needed someone who was a businessman. You know, it was the right thing for the time. There is a historical weirdness to the fact that under Steve Ballmer, Microsoft's stock price never went anywhere, although the company's revenues exploded exponentially, almost, not really, but, you know, they exploded. And that company became much bigger and much more successful. And Steve Ballmer actually set the stage for everything that Microsoft is doing today that we applied to, we think Nadella invented, actually all came out of Steve Ballmer. Those were all his ideas.
Yeah.
But as far as the transition from Ballmer to what's happening today, I don't know how they arrived at Nadella, but obviously Wall Street loves the guy, and now their stock has exploded, and Microsoft has had the biggest market cap in the world at various kinds.
And listen, they've had a tremendous amount of success under Nadella. And I don't know if it has... You know, you look at the turnaround the company did between Windows 8 and now, Just on a consumer level, right? Forget about it. Forget about enterprise. Forget about all that. But I mean, it does affect enterprise actually when you think about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, the one vision mentality is kind of out from Microsoft, and now they're kind of everything. It's like an octopus's arms at this point.
Yeah, and I whoever took over for Steve Ballmer, even though, like I said, the ideas all came from Ballmer, but the problem was if Ballmer and all of his executive infrastructure below him was still in place, they could not have successfully made this transition. So he needed to go so that Microsoft could make this this leap. But this new open Microsoft, this Microsoft where we got to stop pretending that Windows is the center of everything. It's this broader thing. We have to go to where our customers are, blah, 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 whatever. That need, you know, you need new leadership for that to work, you know, for that to even happen. So that transition was also necessary, and they did it. And, you know, I don't know. I the Bill Gates thing, I kind of bring it back to what you originally said. I mean, he has been the chairman of Microsoft since he left the CEO role. He has been a technical advisor or whatever advisor to Satya Nadella. He is still technically associated with the company. Nadella will occasionally, I'm sure in the future, talk about how we, you know, discuss this with Bill, and Bill thought it was a great idea, because people who are shareholders of the company, people who are executives at the company and have a history with the company, or even enthusiast types or press people like me, need that reassurance as part of this transition. Yeah. Because the thing that comes next, the thing that comes after Nadella, is there is no connection to the past. And for that to be okay, there have to be these connective tissues along the way. And Gates, you know, again, for whatever he did as a CEO, once the company became dominant or in the path to become dominant, he has helped in those transitions. You know, he has played a big role, a diminishing role each time, but that's important too. So, you know, Microsoft, it has emerged on the other side of this, a much bigger company, but, you know, a much better company. And I think that's the important thing.
I think for Microsoft's case, they've kind of realized where they have to be to survive in this new era of technology.
Not to survive, but to thrive. You know, like the way to look at it is, you know, people like me, like I grew up on, well, I didn't grow up, but as an adult and from a professional capacity, came up around Windows. Windows was the center of my world, you know, from a kind of a professional perspective. So as Microsoft transitions away from Windows, as Microsoft is no longer the biggest company in the tech industry, you know, it can get a little nervous and nerve-wracking or whatever. The thing to remember is that Microsoft, as a relatively small portion of the personal technology market, comparatively speaking, like in other words, when Microsoft used to be 90% of it and now they're only 30% of it, the thing to remember is that the pie is much bigger. So Microsoft today at 30% is a bigger company and a richer company and a more profitable company than Microsoft was when they were 90% or whatever the numbers are, you know. And that's the perspective that we need. You know, Microsoft knew that. How do you grow when you're number one? You know, I mean, how do you grow? I mean, obviously there's growth we had, whatever. But I mean, the opportunity for Microsoft is now so much bigger. But opportunity speaks to like some future hope. The reality of Microsoft today as a relatively minor part of the industry, they're not minor, but I mean, you know, no longer the dominant force, is a much bigger Microsoft than it was when they were dominant. And that's kind of all you need to know. It worked. They did.
Yeah, it did. Paul, let's wrap it up. You got about 15 minutes to do a What the Talk?
Sure.
All right, let's do that. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Obviously, if you listen to this on YouTube, go subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. If you're listening to the podcast, go to YouTube and subscribe to us on YouTube. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. The next couple of weeks is going to be a very interesting time in all of our lives. So, you know, let's keep the conversation moving.
Still, the cabin fever is going in about 2 weeks. We're talking tough today.
Yeah.
But we're going to be bouncing off the walls.
I'm already getting message from people to go drink in the park with them.
Well, go drink in the park, but don't do it with them.
Yeah.
Just, you know, wave from a distance.
I'm like, what are we, bad high school kids from the city?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's it for this week. See you later. Take care.